Data retention has been on our minds for quite some time. I'd like to motivate why we're here. Obviously, in the information age, there's a lot of communication going on through electronic means. We all know that. We all use it. That's why we're here. Unfortunately, law enforcement thinks that electronic communication needs to be monitored. And it is understandable in a certain way. We all know it from films and everything. Oh, let's trace that telephone call. Obviously, that goes for other forms of communication as well. What is interesting to note is that the police finds who talked to whom at what point in time more interesting, at least for initial investigations, than the actual content. That is what drives data retention. Data retention is not really new. It was discussed in the 80s, it was discussed in the 90s. Obviously, after 9/11, it popped up again. Unfortunately, it popped up in Europe. And the big measure introduced was done by four countries, namely Ireland, Sweden, France, and the UK, in April 2004. This measure was simply outrageous. It was basically called for traffic data on everything, on every protocol, every communication. We would even have to store UDP packets or something like that being transmitted. And it was supposed to be stored for 36 months. Even that comes from the telephony world, unsuccessful calls and routing information was deemed to be stored. So I don't think anyone ever considered storing routing information for a message in the internet world. I'm not really sure how to do it, and I thought myself a techie. So that was simply impossible to implement. Fortunately, there was consultation. The Commission thought that this Council proposal was outrageous and did consultation in June 2004. And after the Dutch presidency took over in July 2004, even the Council thought that it might be a good idea to do some consultation and do a study. So the Dutch presidency did a feasibility study for the Netherlands and found, it might be difficult to do even just for the Netherlands. So they made an amended draft which reduced the data types and most notably reduced the time frame for data to be stored to down to 12 months. During the Luxembourg presidency earlier this year, nothing really happened and industry was rather happy that nothing happened because obviously we didn't want this and users most certainly don't want this. In June 2005, the EU Parliament voted on a report by the rapporteur, Alexander Alvaro, and they simply refused data retention based on the economic impacts. The report found that it would be at least 100 million euros per year burden on large telcos, that it was incompatible with the Convention on Human Rights, and that they found in talking to the police that even law enforcement doesn't really want this, which is true. It's not so much law enforcement. It is mostly interior ministries or home affairs offices who want this. If you talk to the actual people doing it, they don't know what to do with the data. Unfortunately, the UK presidency took over in July, basically the 1st of July 2005, and we had tube bombings on the 7th of July. Which really started a lot of efforts by the UK Home Office to get data retention implemented. Charles Clarke made it a personal priority to implement data retention by the end of 2005. And they released a new paper, not so much a full document, but a position paper on the 27th of July. It was outrageous. It increased the demands again, increased the storage time frames again. And there was a joint meeting of the Interior and Justice Ministers in Newcastle where industry had a chance to present again and present their problems with the whole proposal. In this meeting, fortunately, I have to say, especially the German Interior Minister, Schily, to our big surprise, was very much against implementing the measure as proposed by the UK. and that stopped it dead again for some time. While all this was going on, there was a political impact assessment being done by the Commission, and they found that a third pillar instrument. In the EU, you have several pillars, basically, who can introduce measures. First pillar instruments are the measures being done by the Commission. Third pillar instruments is done what is done by the countries, by the Council. And they found that under the EU legal framework, a Council proposal or a measure being introduced by the Council would probably not suffice to implement data protection at all. I thought that was good. Unfortunately, the Council thought that it's not good because they felt that, especially DG Justice felt, that it was important to have something like data retention. The big problems here were that the cost, the Commission found that the cost, which was estimated at several billion euros to implement it throughout Europe, could not be shouldered by the industry, and that the states should actually do this, which is adamantly refused by some member states, like Germany, like France. Still, the Council demanded that by end of 2005, they want a solution. So the Commission came up with a proposal. This is where everything started, what we have today. To overcome the deadlock, I just said, the first pillar, third pillar instrument problem, they introduced a proposal for a directive on the 29th of September. As you can already see, it's a rather short time frame from then to now, and which is unusual in EU legislation. It was more or less the Council text, but it had some improvements. Most notably, reimbursement was in there. So industry and whoever built a system would be fully reimbursed. Also, there were data types, at least, finally, there were some data types in there which should be stored and not a general store everything provision. However, these were in an annex, and in the EU legislation, an annex can be changed rather easily. So it doesn't need to go through Parliament again. If it's in an annex, the annex can simply be changed in a working group, more or less. Also in the meantime, some countries have already adopted measures. In Ireland and Italy, for example, you have several years of data preservation already. France just also in November adopted new legislation in that regard. Some countries have an interesting split, like in Germany. The government wants data retention. The Parliament refused it so far. That same is true for the UK. Interestingly enough, the whole measure introduced in 2004 was introduced just 2 months after the UK Parliament refused to have data retention. So for once, some UK government officials thought, we could use the EU for something. On the other hand, some countries refuse data retention altogether. In Austria, it's already ruled against, was ruled against a year ago by the Institutional Court. At least cost reimbursement was ruled on. Finland is not in favor of it either. This might come in handy later on, because if just in one country the whole measure is deemed illegal by the constitutional courts, then the whole measure will have to be gone from the whole EU agenda. One country is enough. What happened afterwards was so far unheard of in the EU. I call it role-playing the Parliament. The Parliament didn't want this. The Parliament wanted their study group to, their rapporteur, Alvaro, to come up with his view on this new proposal. And especially the economic group worked on this quite a bit. But after the Justice and Home Affairs Ministers meeting on the 28th of November, there was a new paper released called Joint Commission Council Proposal. It was released by the Council, As far as we know, the Commission wasn't really too much involved in it at that point in time, but it was more or less the amended Commission text. Now the strange part begins. On the 22nd of December, Charles Clarke, the UK Home Affairs Minister, agreed with the heads of the parliamentary groups, the Fraktionen, in the EU Parliament, at least with the big two, with the Socialist and the European People's Party, I think it's called, that they actually approved this measure. They made a compromise. They refused to talk to the lobbying groups afterwards. We can only assume today that it had to do something. It's an assumption, I have to say, that it had to do something with general EU financing, which is or was refused in the past by the UK and now all of a sudden is going through. This is very bad for us because the whole consultation process, as it normally happens in council proposals, didn't happen. The Commission still had a meeting in October with technical experts where they found out that for some of the terms used in their own proposal, they don't even know the meaning. They don't know what they actually mean by this and that data type, which for industry was very surprising. One would expect that if you release a document, you at least know what you're talking about. But that happens if you just copy it from another source, in this case, the Council. Despite protests, also newly adopted by journalists and everyone who all of a sudden found out, we can't protect our informants anymore, or even some members of parliament who said, I can't refuse to tell. And that's a basic right of every member of parliament. You can refuse to tell who told you something or who you talked to in the past. This is gone. Effectively, it's gone under data retention. But it wasn't enough to turn around the majority of the EU parliament. And so on the 14th of December, this whole proposal was accepted by parliament. Alexander Alvaro withdrew his report and his name from the whole paper. He was so upset that his work was completely ignored and the significant changes which were supposed to be put into the paper were refused. That's where we stand today. That is the sad history. And I was running through this quickly to have more time for what follows. And so what is the situation today? Data retention has been agreed by the Parliament and member states need to implement it in national law. It is very doubtful that the European courts will uphold this. It has significant impacts on human rights. And is even more likely that at least one court in the, or one of the constitutional courts in the EU will refuse it, which will be enough. Still, as of now, we have this directive. The directive is a lot less than what was originally asked for. From an industry viewpoint, I can say it is at least doable. That's not a personal opinion, that has nothing to do with my personal rights, but as an industry representative, I can say, okay, this can be done, while the original proposals were simply impossible to implement. It only wants data which is generated or processed. That's one of the terms they can't explain or properly explain. For 6 to 24 months. If countries want to, they can file for less or more. Data stored can only be used for serious crimes. That one would assume we could use something like for the, Haftbefehl, I'm looking for the English word here, a restraining order, something like that. There's a European version of this, which is you can only get for certain crimes, which is major crimes like murder or organized crime or something like this. However, it is up to the countries to define in their national law, each individually, what is a serious crime where the data stored under this directive can be used. The rules to access the data can be defined or should be defined in national law. That effectively means while there is or isn't a harmonized way to store it, it's very different procedures on who can access it, how it is accessed, if it needs a court order at all, or if it's just freely accessible to law enforcement. That fortunately is not so in Germany, I have to say. Here it would at least require a judge to sign on the access of the data. The positive thing is that no content data whatsoever can now be stored under this directive. Quote is, no data revealing the content of the communication can be retained pursuant to this directive. That is quite different to what we had before. This, for example, prevents storage of things like URLs or significant portions of SMS messages, for example. Let's look a little bit at the categories of data. It is, in a way, quite entertaining. There's four types, which in general, which need to be retained. One is falls under the heading of data necessary to trace and identify the source of a communication. So basically the originator of every communication. I've skipped the other parts. There's quite a bit on telephony and GSM mobile networks in this. I focus here on the internet side because it's my assumption that for this Congress this is the more relevant part. Specifically, the types now for internet access now only relate to internet access, internet email, and internet telephony. All the other protocols, other things, we, at least for now, were able to strip out of the whole proposal. What needs to be retained in this, assuming you are the service provider for this, that is the big question, is the user ID allocated for every transmission of this type, user ID and telephone number allocated to any communication entering the public telephone network. That, of course, is more relevant for voice over IP. So this is a lot of this is concerning telephone calls. If you really talk to law enforcement, they want telephone calls and emails. That's more or less the only thing they can handle right now. Yes, they're aware there's things like chat or other forms of instant messaging, peer-to-peer networks, but they can't handle it. So they have no equipment, they have no knowledge how to handle it. But obviously, if they have a call in the public telephone network and this then traces back to a voice over IP call, they want to be able to identify the user who placed that call. And obviously, the user data, which means that the address database, the subscriber data you have, needs to be able to be mapped against the communication. I do think that this is a very valid concern. If you have, through whatever means, you can actually trace something to a user ID, one should be able to map this user ID to a real person, at least for serious crimes. Obviously, there's also data to be stored which purports to the destination of a communication. That's the second part. In here, we're missing the access part. It's only internet email and internet telephony, which is of interest. Again, user ID or telephone number. And this is actually quotes on the proposal. So this is as it is in the text. There's not much more detail. There's no explanations of what this means. And if you talk to them, for example, things like a user ID, it's not even clear what this means. And it can mean several things. I mean, we think, okay, user ID can be anything, your email address, your login name, something like that. But they're not clear about what they mean with it. And especially it gets interesting if you have several users on one connection, which in a broadband world is quite normal, I'd say. And again, obviously, the mapping of the administrative data names and addresses to these user IDs. Data necessary to identify date and time. This was our biggest concern in the beginning, because for a lot of protocols, that is rather difficult. When does a communication start? When does a communication stop? I personally feel it's still very difficult to attribute this to an internet telephony call. Yes, you might get the data out of the SIP server, but no one tells you when the call was actually terminated or if it's still ongoing, and the call just has nothing to do with the signaling. So the things like the duration of a call, very difficult. However, what they want basically is login times, log-off times, the IP addresses used, and basically this boils down to storing IP address to username mappings and your dynamic allocation. If you have that, at least for Germany, that would probably cover it. And of course, you need the log files of SIP servers or email servers. And that's what law enforcement wants. The text says it a bit different, but that's effectively what this is aimed at. Identify the type of communication. Okay, that's basically the service use. That's very short for internet. This is a very long paragraph for mobile networks, for example, because they're looking at all the different types of messages separately, MMS, SMS, this type of stuff. What we couldn't get out, unfortunately, is the user equipment part. Law enforcement, and that comes again from the mobile world, from the emails and everything. They want identification about the actual equipment used by the user. Calling telephone numbers in dial-up access, that might be understandable because it's necessary to trace a communication at all in a calling world where you can do anonymous internet access call by call style. For DSL lines, that's a bit more of a problem. Also for all sorts of broadband connections, they want to know which device actually initiated the communication. And we were able to strip out MAC addresses. Originally, this proposal had MAC addresses in there as well. Very strange thing because it's not really a fixed address for a device. And they have a strange issue in this text at that point because the three dots you see down on the screen, that is actually in the text. So it is probably a little bit extensible in the end, but it's a bit strange because it is now not in an annex, it is in the text, meaning that it would have to go through Parliament again. I don't know how Parliament could approve three dots, but obviously that's fine for them. If we compare what we have now to other states, this is all introduced under the fight for terrorism. Okay, we've heard that a zillion times on television lately. Strangely enough, the biggest terrorist fighter, the US, they start wars about this. They see no advantage in data retention. There is no data retention measure introduced or even proposed in the US. The state agencies in the US think that fast freeze, quick thaw is the better method. They first want an indication through some other means on who to look at before they actually want data stored. Israel, another big target for terrorists, they think that the personal rights are the higher good, and they don't want data retention at all. That's the official position today. On the other hand, Ireland, I think it's positive that they would actually fight it in court. They will fight this directive in court, not because it implements data retention. No, it undermines their own data retention rules, which are already there and which call for 3 years. So there will be countries going against the current directive because they think that their personal position or their national position is undermined. Even bigger, from my personal point of view, are the changes we have in France lately. End of November, they've introduced a new police law, which would allow law enforcement to access data stored under this directive without any court order. That's what I would call a police state. If police can simply access data of this type, data which really seriously undermines your personal rights without a court order, without a judge reviewing it, for every investigation they can simply ask for this data, and as a provider you'll have to deliver. Poland, even worse, they think that a storage time frame of 15 years sounds good to them. I'm not really sure where this is going, even for documents and legal documents and everything. They just have a 10-year time frame, so I'm not really sure what you want with 15 years of telecommunication data. But that is their current position. And so far, with the new government they have there, no one is going against this. Obviously, this impacts human rights. Personally, I feel threatened. I don't want this. Why does anyone have the right to store my communication data? I'll go into can they store my communication data a little bit later, but that's a different discussion. In the past, parliaments throughout Europe have rejected data retention. They have rejected it in Germany, they have rejected it in the UK. Most of the significant countries have rejected it. Still, governments have followed it through. I think that's an interesting break, that governments can actually want something in the EU or through EU measures which they cannot go through in, or cannot enforce in the national legislation. The data protection officials, they have raised their voices and they see they have serious concerns. They think that this new legislation is incompatible with basic rights. This is basically because without any clue, without a starting point, police will have data available. Normally, and that's the overturn in the basic principle, any investigation only starts at some point in time. You cannot go back in time with the investigation. At least you don't have data to go back in time. And this is now overturned for everyone, for every individual. And we have in the Human Rights Convention the right of privacy in communication. That is a very basic right, and only for serious offenses it can be undermined. Now we have a general provision which undermines it beforehand. This is simply unacceptable. There are organizations like Privacy International which will start a court case against this, which everyone can join. If you visit their webpage, you can sign it. Factual analysis, what happened here? In the whole consultation process, and I've followed this process for 2 years in Brussels now, or 1 3/4, law enforcement was never able to demonstrate the effectiveness of data retention. There are other means, like fast freeze, quicksaw, which really impacts only one user at that point in time, not everyone, which in countries like the US have proven much more effective than data retention ever would. Law enforcement doesn't have the processing capabilities to actually use the data stored in data retention. So a means which would actually give them what they're really looking for is a lot easier and will in the end be quicker in the whole process than having huge amounts of data they cannot process in an adequate time frame. In the media, law enforcement, or especially interior ministers, claimed that they have demonstrated where data retention or data stored in the past, which was accidentally available at providers, helped solve cases. I can tell you it was only 3 cases which were named. Always the same cases. It was one from the Netherlands, one from Spain, and one from London, or from UK. And that was overlaying data. All of them were related to mobile devices. None of it concerned internet data. None of it even concerned traditional voice telephony. Why would one want data which they cannot process? That is the big question which popped up over internet data. Law enforcement today is not aware of the problems they face with internet data. Throughout the process, we had to introduce them to concepts like a public hotspot. Problems like, oh, a single HTTP session, what does it mean? That can be 100 connections for one site. If you just view one page, that can be any number of individual connections. They weren't aware of that. It's unexpected. One would think that at least the major agencies like the Bundeskriminalamt or the Home Office in the UK also would be aware how this type of communication works. They aren't. The demands are still there. And even the EU Justice Department and even DG Info, which normally is quite aware of what is going on, were not aware of self-organized voice over IP networks, or they didn't consider city-wide free access zones for a wavelength or something like that. Very strange. These are realities today, realities which will not map into data retention. Another problem is that a user might not even be aware of the communication. As a provider, we have thousands of connections which the users are not aware of. Background processes, spam, backdoors, whatever, attacks. It's a huge part of the connections in the network today, and none of the users concerned initiated these. How does that relate to data retention? Is it an active process? Still, everyone is under scrutiny here, and will be part of the investigation if his IP address pops up somewhere. I find it highly questionable that there is no clear case which can be demonstrated. How can law enforcement, which is supposed to uphold the law, at least I thought that's what it is, can avoid every discussion and stop discussion. Whenever they lost a discussion or an argument somewhere, someone just stand up and said, well, do you want to be responsible when the next bomb explodes? Techies kind of say, well, but we're not responsible. But with politicians, that doesn't work. That's the moment. Wherever the discussion stands at that point, it's stopped dead in its tracks. Politicians will just be shocked at that point and say, oh, no, we don't want to be responsible. So, okay, let's have data retention because we don't want to be responsible. That's kind of like the argument goes. And from my experience, it is very hard to go against interior home office ministries. Their arguments are never, they're all emotional, they're not factually based. What happened in December is basically blackmailing the Commission by the threat of a council decision by the end of the year. Even so, they knew that the third pillar instrument would not be legal in the EU legal framework. The council threatened to still adopt a framework decision. Argument being, well, then we have it, and it's years before it's overturned in the EU courts. Is that something which you would expect from governments? I certainly didn't, but I was faced with it early December. The normal Commission consultation process, normally the Commission has consultation with industry, with individuals. Every individual can send in his concerns. There is a whole process. It didn't happen. It was simply stopped dead. And as I said before, many of the governments who supported this, who wanted this, cannot get it through in their own parliaments and in their own national legislation. What does it mean for industry? That is not so important for the private individuals, maybe, but it's a paradigm shift. So far, we were told to store as little as we can. Now we're told to store as much as we can. That overturns the internal processes quite a bit. And even worse, the cost is very different depending on the country you're in. In Austria, for example, you get full cost reimbursement. In Germany, you get zero cost reimbursement. This is not really compatible with a Commission directive and will be a separate court case. It's already clear that large telcos like KPN, for example, will file against this. We need new procedures. So far we were told we're not allowed to to correlate usage data with administrative data. Now we need to do this right up front before we store it. We were prohibited to do that in the past. Those new procedures are always very difficult and very expensive to implement. And the whole measure requires, that's part of the measure, it requires secure, reliable storage systems with backup, with access protection and everything. That is not standard for logging data today. We have one thing in legal interception today, which is called undue delays. That means when there is an order to tap a line, it needs to be implemented within hours. The same undue delays we now find in the text for releasing data from the data retention proposal. Basically, it means that we need to dedicate personnel, which is also quite expensive. On the acquisition side, I have to say it is now at least doable. It wasn't before. It still means that we need to get data of various sorts of devices, routers, hosts, administrative systems, and process it and put it into one system, which is then secured and access only granted on a court order. But a lot of this was never systematically retrieved so far. So it is. It will put heavy impact on the systems, on the switches, on the routers. That also means that significant system upgrades are required, which are again expensive. This motivates why cost was such a big discussion issue in the whole process. It's a sad fact that human rights were the minor discussion point. Cost was the major discussion point throughout the whole 2 years. It also requires new investments in phased out technology, which is being phased out right now, especially the SDH and SS7 switches, which are in use by the big telcos today. KPN estimates that they need to place an additional switch next to every switch they have today. Basically, they would have to double their investment into a technology which they're phasing out within the next 3 years. It might speed up voice over IP developments. That's a positive side. But I'm not really sure if that really is a good driver for data retention. Also, obviously, law enforcement thinks about all along the lines of traditional telephone calls. Whenever you talk to them about the number of calls they want to look at or what they think their systems need to handle, they are the numbers which pop up are clearly related to the traditional telephony. Obviously, we all know that the number of sessions which happen in data networks are several factors higher, that just setting up a telephone call in the internet is effectively several independent sessions. So there will be several orders of magnitude more connections to be logged. Which leads us to the processing. All this needs to be processed on the ISP side. So far, we are not really sure what we need to process because there's no definition for the data types. We don't have any data structures. Nothing has been done so far on this. Still, we know that, for example, the only effective way to store this is to pre-process it and then store it because you cannot post-process it properly. It will never lead to a good result. Interestingly enough, cost reimbursement, at least like it works in Germany, would mean that you got only reimbursed for post-processing, which leads us to an interesting situation. Do I pre-process or post-process? I would tend to post-processing because I don't care about the quality of the data. Is this all sane? Probably not. Even if we pre-process the data, even if we take all the cost, one single provider would still never be able to give you a good view. Law enforcement needs to be able to correlate data from multiple sources. Two providers, typically some email service provider, some other sources if it has multiple protocols. So it doesn't really help you to, if you find one provider, it's still a lot of detail work to actually get even a single session together. On other things like voice over IP, we have no idea how to store it. Yes, if you look at a special setup, like it's used by some large telcos, you might be able to store it. Strangely enough, this is the view most regulators take today on voice over IP networks. The concept they have is that of networks like the one implemented by T-Online now, like AOL, where the whole voice cloud is under the control of one provider. If it's cross-boundary, there is no concept. Other things like the requirement to store BCCs of emails. Service providers currently have no idea how to do it. The whole concept of a BCC tells me I don't know about it. So how would I store this? Other things are okay, and we could provide it from the systems today already, which is the IP to user mapping, which is a very, very valid concern, also for other legal cases, fraud on the internet, something like that. If you don't have IP to user mappings, you won't be able to deliver on this. Which brings me to the point of avoidance. The proposal as it is today, from my point of view as a techie, is completely senseless. If you use an email server outside of the EU, nothing gets locked. If you use a SIP server outside the EU, nothing gets locked. And you also won't catch the actual voice stream because you don't know about the stream. If you use the non-standard ports, it won't get locked because that you're not looking at this. If you run your own service of broadband connections, for example, you're not part of the group which needs to store data. Only public public service providers need to store data. So if you run your own service, you're out. If you only use public lookup services, same thing. The individual call which needs to be logged is not part of it. The DNS or enum lookup is not part of what needs to be stored. And then the actual call setup is not done by a service provider. It's easily avoided. Also, there's an exception for internet cafes, public hotspots, and foreign SIM cards. Nothing gets locked, or at least it might get locked, but we don't know who the one who actually did the communication was, so it's useless information. In Germany, just to look at this, probably our constitutional court will overturn it as well. That is looking at the last decisions regarding wiretapping. So far, we still have a standing resolution of the parliament that they don't want data retention. We don't know how the new coalition will look at this once it's brought to vote, but that is the situation right now. Schäuble thinks that it's the Staatsbürgerpflicht of the industry to actually fully take over the cost. In the end, it doesn't really matter because either if the state bears the cost or is done through industry, in the end users will pay. It is a significant cost. Even now today, it is still, I have to say, through the whole process, we were able to cut down estimated cost by at least, I'd say it's a 1/50 of the original cost. If the original proposal from April 2004 would have come to bear, it would have been really very, very expensive, and we believe that communication would have raised the price at least 50%. But honestly, in Germany, it's too early to tell right now. Mr. Ulrich from the BMWR will have to come up with his proposals on how to implement this. And so far, he hasn't. That will probably happen in Q2. Okay, my conclusions on this. Only uninformed individuals will be detected. I'm not sure if terrorists are uninformed individuals. I believe they know very well what they're doing. So once we have data retention implemented, I'm pretty sure they know how to avoid it. And looking at their structures, they'll probably use servers outside of the EU. If we store data, law enforcement will not be able to process it. So what do we do? We'll probably even have to build systems to deliver data in a way they can work with it. It is interesting to note that states want something they cannot afford. We have that in Germany already today with legal interception. For over a year now, we don't have any financial regulations on this, because whatever was put on the table was refused by the states, because they say, oh no, this is too expensive, we cannot pay for this. I don't know, I was brought up in a way that whatever I want, I need to be able to pay for it. It is disproportionate from my point of view under the human rights measure, but for this we have to wait for the courts now. The states decided on it, the parliament decided on it, we'll have to see what the courts will make of it. But as I said before, the basic principle of police work is overturned, and that impacts your rights. Everybody is now under investigation all the time. That's the sad conclusion. Right. Questions?
Well, works. Well, I have first a comment and then a question. The first thing is, you at times insinuated that the goals that are supposed to be achieved by those measures are legitimate. And I think this is one of the core issues in arguing with these people. Most of these goals aren't legitimate. An open society has to pay a price for its openness, and it has to, at some point, decide we want to pay that price. And there is no—I mean, if you aren't clear on the point that there is a price for an open society, you've already lost your argument. Because in the end, of course, you can always close the society a bit more down and avoid a bit more crime. So that's one point. An open society has its costs. And this has to be very clear. And if they don't want an open society, they should say so. And the other question, well, we've now seen that the whole thing probably doesn't even do what the proponents hope it will. So you appear to think that it's mainly incompetence, so these people simply don't know what they're doing. Could there be other reasons involved there that are not too obvious?
Catch your drift, yeah. Okay, let me first, on your first point, I'd like to comment on this as well. I have to say, why they want to do it, I do think that is really legitimate. That's not the point. It's just the wrong thing to do. I am personally, for example, I'm not willing to accept these limitations to my privacy rights. The principal idea that law enforcement should be able, if they have a starting point through some other means, they should be able to put something together. For example, the IP username mappings. I think that is very legitimate. Do you have a right to stay anonymous in the internet? That's an interesting separate discussion, but if, for example, through eBay they have some logs, or through some service they have IP logs, one should be able to map this to a user who actually did this. That is just in the telephone network, you have that forever. You don't even question it, that your number is attributable to a person. Does that mean that they should be able to store all the communications taking part over that? No, I don't think that is legitimate. They would need to find another source, for example, the server, the e-commerce server where things happened, as a source for the actual communication, and then through the IP logs you can trace it back to the person who did it. That would be legitimate. Data retention, as we have it here, I don't think is legitimate either. For the reasons, I have to say from my experience, in the interior ministries, there's really a lot of incompetence. They think old world telecommunications. And on this, they have demands. It's easy to come up with a demand. Oh, we want simply all we want normally in an investigation is ask for this and that data. Why don't we save it up front so we have it for everyone in the future? But by definition, I mean, if you look at the demands of the interior ministries, it always goes the same way. Why are we talking that Schily, for example, all of a sudden is kind of like right wing, or Schäuble now is even worse? That it just happens that the security concerns, when you're responsible for the security concerns, you have a paradigm shift. I mean, you want, you're kind of like looking, oh, if I have everything, I can help secure the state or something like that. So there might be more behind it, you never know, but it's just they're trying out, they're starting from their maximum perspective, and we're starting by saying, okay, we don't want this. It's a compromise process. Right now we can argue that we have lost this, and because we have data retention now, but if you're looking at where they started and what is actually to be stored today, there's a huge difference. I personally feel that we achieved quite a bit, so that only, I have to say, data on email and telephone calls, more or less, and for telephone calls you had it before, needs to be stored. I'm quite happy that we don't have storage of web traffic, of peer-to-peer traffic, of chat, things like that. I think that's a good achievement. Does that answer your question? Sorry? Any more questions? Okay, then thank you for your attention. And I think we have a little workshop this afternoon sometime where we go into lobbying a little bit more. So who's interested in that, you can join us. I'm not really sure where this is set up right now, but it's supposed to be at 3 or something like that. Good. Yeah.